5:30, and we definitely have a quorum. I think I was sort of looking for Alder Uguer to join us, and I think he probably will very soon. But why don't we call the meeting to order? This is the April 7th, 2025 meeting of the Madison Plan Commission, and we'll start with the roll call.
Hey, Commissioner Mendez?
Here.
Commissioner McCahill?
Here.
Alder Field?
Here.
Alder Uguer is not here presently. Alder Duncan?
Here.
Commissioner Solheim?
Here.
Commissioner Heck?
Here.
Commissioner Sanders?
Here.
Alternate Bazin?
Here.
Alternate Wesniewski?
Present.
And Chair Gnom?
I'm here. Thanks. So let's start off with technical information from our facilitator, Jesse. Take it away.
All right. Welcome to our virtual Plan Commission meeting. We're going to cover a few basic items before beginning. If you lose connection at any point during the meeting, you can reconnect by clicking the link or calling the number in your original email. To members and city staff, members, if you are able, please activate your video and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Staff, if you are able, please activate your video when you are speaking. Use the raise hand feature when you'd like to be recognized to speak or ask questions. Staff, click raise hand when you are asked a question. The chair would do the best to call on committee members in the order in which their hands are raised. Lowering your hand will take you out of the queue. Members of the public who have registered to speak, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon. The clerk will tell you when your time is up. After all registrants speak, a member of the body may ask you a question. If you need to share documentation with the commission, please send it to the email listed in today's agenda. Chair, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Jesse. Our first item is time for a public comment for items not on the Plan Commission agenda. Megan, do we have any registrants for public comment tonight?
No, we do not.
Okay, thanks. We'll next go to disclosures and recusals. Members of the Plan Commission should make any required disclosures or recusals under the city's ethics code. I'll ask if any commissioners have disclosures or recusals related to tonight's agenda, and I'll recognize Commissioner Mendez.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to disclose on items 13 and 14. I work at the university, and I am part of the project team on those, so I will also be recusing myself from those two agenda items.
Thank you. I think we can handle that. Commissioner McCahill.
Just disclosing that I'm a employee of the university, but it won't affect my vote tonight.
Thank you. Alder Field?
Yep, same disclosure on my part. I'm a UW employee. That won't affect my vote.
Thank you. All right. Our next item is the minutes of our March 17th, 2025 regular meeting. Are there any additions or corrections from the commissioners for the March 17th minutes? Seeing no raised hands, is there a motion to approve? And Alder Field, thank you. And Commissioner Heck, that will be a second from you. Thank you. Any further discussion on the minutes or the motion to approve the minutes? All right, well, call to a vote. Is there any objection to unanimous approval for last month's minutes? Seeing none, we will record those as unanimously approved. Welcome, Alder Uguer. We just finished the minutes. We're on the schedule of meetings. Our next meeting after tonight is Monday, April 28th. And then we will have two meetings in May on May 12th and May 19th. And those will all be virtual meetings at 5:30 p.m. All right. So we will move to our new business. And we'll start with our consent agenda. And it has been the custom of the Plan Commission to remove from the agenda those items on which staff members believe an application has been sufficiently reviewed to support approval with all the conditions placed upon it by the various city departments and in which the applicant accepts those conditions, and there are no individuals who have registered to speak in opposition to those items. The items proposed for the consent agenda tonight are on the screen before you. And those items recommended for approval are items 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 12. Of those items before us on the consent agenda, are there any requests from the commissioners for separation for any of those items? I'll pause. And seeing no raised hands or requests for separation, we'll read those items into the record and consider them together as a consent agenda. So item 2 is Legistar 87610, determining a public purpose and necessity and adopting a transportation project plat number 5992-10-19, City of Madison, Mineral Point Road, U.S. Highway 12 to High Point Road, for the acquisition per the plat of land and interest required. This is located in the southeast quarter of the southwest quarter of Section 23, Township 7 North, Range 8 East, in the City of Madison, Dane County, Wisconsin, and that's in Alder District 9. Item 3 is a zoning text amendment. This is Legistar Item 87450. Amending various sections of Chapter 28 of the Madison General Ordinances related to lodging to allow hotel and motel rentals of 30 days or more. Item four is development related requests. Item 4 is Legistar 87462 relating to 306 North Brook Street in Alder District 8. Consideration of a conditional use pursuant to MGO Section 28.134(3) for projections into the Capitol View preservation limit to allow rooftop mechanical space and an elevator overrun for a previously approved 15-story, 189-unit apartment building. Item 5 is Legistar Item 87463 relating to 414 South Baldwin Street in Alder District 6. Consideration of an alteration of an approved conditional use in a traditional shopping street district to amend the conditions of approval for a hotel and restaurant tavern with outdoor eating area. Item 6 is Legistar 87464 relating to 1241 Moreland Road in Alder District 14. This is consideration of a demolition permit to demolish a single family residence. Item 7 is Legistar 87465, related to 2352 South Park Street in Alder District 14. This is consideration of a conditional use in the Commercial Corridor Transitional CCT District for temporary outdoor event to allow a pop-up market adjacent to a mixed-use building. Item 8 is Legistar Item number 87466, relating to 5004 Tradewinds Parkway in Alder District 16. Consideration of a conditional use in the Industrial Limited IL District for indoor recreation to allow spaces in an existing multi-tenant industrial building to be converted into an indoor recreation facility. Then item 9 is Legistar number 87467. And that is 1110 Deming Way, and it's on a corner, also 8701 Blackhawk Road. And this is consideration of a conditional use in the Suburban Employment Center SEC District for indoor recreation, consideration of a conditional use in the SEC District for outdoor recreation, consideration of a conditional use in the SEC District for a restaurant slash tavern, and consideration of a conditional use in the SEC district for an outdoor eating area open past 9 p.m. and with amplified sound, all to allow construction of a 31,000 square foot indoor recreation facility with restaurant, tavern, outdoor recreation, and outdoor eating area. Item 10 is Legistar number 87468. This relates to 6501 Kilpatrick Lane in Alder District 16. This is consideration of a conditional use in the Commercial Corridor Transitional CCT District for a drive-through window to allow construction of a financial institution credit union with a drive-through window. And then finally, item 12 is Legistar number 87472, and that is approving the final plat of First Addition to Hill Valley on land generally addressed as 1051 South Pleasant View Road and 1050 South High Point Road in Alder District 1. All right. So I will open the public hearing and close the public hearing on our consent agenda, and we'll move to a vote. Could I ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda and a second? Commissioner Mendez, thank you. Alder Field, I'll take that as a second. And I will ask, is there any objection to unanimous approval for the items on the consent agenda? And seeing no objection, we'll record those as passed unanimously. All right, so we will now move to our regular agenda. And the next open item is item 11, which is Legistar 87469, relating to 6802 Hammersley Road in Alder District 20. And this is consideration of a conditional use in the Conservancy CN District for an emergency electric generator for the Green Tree landfill. And I think Lisa's going to just give us an intro to this item, and we'll then open the public hearing. So Lisa, thank you. Welcome. Yeah,
thanks. So the applicant is seeking approval of a conditional use in the Conservancy District to construct a standalone electrical generator in the former Green Tree landfill, which is now Green Tree Chapel Hill Park. The former landfill is partially maintained with a gas extraction system, and the proposed generator would be used during electrical outages to help that system continue to function. The generator would be located next to some existing electrical equipment that's located approximately 400 feet north of McKenna Boulevard. And the generator pad is approximately 140 feet from the nearest residence on Connecticut Court, which is about 5 feet closer than the existing equipment that is located on the site. City Engineering estimates that the generator would run approximately an hour every other month for maintenance, and then for the duration of any unexpected power outage, for a total of approximately 20 hours in most years. And the staff recommendation is for approval. Thanks.
Thanks, Lisa. We have registrants for this item, so we'll open the public hearing. And we'll stick to our 3-minute time limit for comments. Megan, would you call on the registrants, please?
Our first registered speaker is Jay McClellan in District 20, registered neither in support or opposition, but wishing to speak.
Okay, I'm assuming you can hear me. Thank you.
We can hear you. Yep, welcome. Thanks.
Great, thank you. The first I heard of any maintenance or any issues with the landfill regarding this was a postcard I received in the mail just last week. What's very frustrating about this is not even having a basis to understand if this is really needed or not. We're just told all of a sudden, my house backs up to the landfill. Over the years, city engineering has been, I would say, characterize very inconsistent about communicating with neighbors in regards to the work that needs to be done. I'm glad the city's investing in our safety. What was it, 1983? There was a gas escape out of the landfill and blew up a house at Hammersley and McKenna. So there's obviously been some investment in this over the years. I'm glad for that. But telling us how bad is it, or here we are in austere times when we just recently voted to expand our property taxes so we could keep firefighters and police officers on the streets. And then we're told, oh, by the way, how do I compare the need for this generator when somebody just sends me a postcard last week? You know, hey, if it's safe, if it increased my safety, sure, but there's no way to really look at this and understand how important this is until you all of a sudden hear that this concern is coming before the Planning Commission because they have to, because engineering has to seek a variance here. It's really frustrating, and I don't know what to think about. Is this important or not? Am I concerned with the sound? Not terribly. Am I concerned with views or anything? Not terribly. But is this really needed, or how bad is it? Nobody has reached out to say, hey, this is bad. It seems to me engineering has gone out of their way to avoid talking with people. Until you read this, I didn't even know it was a park. I thought it was still a landfill, but apparently it's Green Tree Chapel Hill Park. In the past, maintenance was done apparently by parks in terms of the greenery around the place. I called to ask how they were going to do it. They said I had to talk to engineering. Engineering sent me to parks. My concern is with this that whatever needs to be done is being buried underneath the veneer of, you know, I'm the professional. I need to know, here's what needs to happen in your backyard, without really telling me what the issues are in my backyard.
Yep. Thank you for your comments. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. I do see Alder Harrington McKinney's hand up, but let's go through our public registrants first, if that's all right.
Okay. The next registrant is John Maywald, also from District 20, registered neither support or opposition, but not wishing to speak. And we also have Jack Brody, representing the City of Madison Engineering Division, who is here available to answer questions. And that is all of our registrants.
All right, thanks, Megan. Alder Harrington McKinney, I'd like to recognize you next, if that's all right.
So thank you very much. I hear that a staff person will be there to answer questions. Could we spend that time in having the staff person just explain a bit more detail about the need? And I am reading the postcard, but I think it would be helpful for those constituents who did call. They're not complaining, but they just need information. And I think that requesting the staff to provide that information would be helpful.
Thank you, Alder. Megan, as a point, just a point of order, should we close the public hearing before we do the dialogue with staff?
Yeah, I think it would be appropriate to see if there are any questions for registrants, which Jack Brody is one. So if anybody has questions for him, and then it is at the purview of the commission if you would like to invite Jack to speak as a staff member during your discussion as well.
Thanks. Are there any questions from the commissioners for any of our registrants, either Mr. McClellan or Jack or our other registrant, whose name I didn't write down?
Maywald.
Yes. Alder Uguerre?
Yes, and I suppose I could have waited for this question to Mr. Brody when we go to the staff comments, but just a quick question. I remember discussing a similar issue for a landfill in District 19. Am I correct in recalling that the way we would handle in the past an electrical outage and power to the gas relief system, that we take a portable generator to the site and that's how we would deal with the situation? Is that recollection correct?
Yes, Alder, that is correct. So the engineering division has two portable generators that we bring to our landfill sites when we do lose power to provide temporary backup power to our landfill sites. They're also used in various places around the city when we get requests for them. You know, sometimes we get requests from fire or other different projects where they're used on. But yeah, that is correct.
So I guess the corollary question or the follow-up question here is that we have two of these backup generators, and in a major power outage, we might have multiple needs for them, possibly more than two or whatever, and And this is a solution that just gives us more more certainty that we'll be able to handle the problem.
Yeah, so Green Tree in particular has the highest potential for producing methane gas, which is explosive. And so it's our highest priority site for restoring power if we do lose power. We like to have a turnaround time of 4 hours at the site, not having an outage more than 4 hours so that we're continuously running the gas extraction system. Some of our other sites, so we have two sites that we like to have a 4 hour turnaround time, and then the three other sites, we don't want to be down more than 24 hours. So the idea behind this project is that we have backup power. We never go 4 hours without power. And if we are in a situation where there's flooding, where staff can't get a portable generator to the site, then that power generation is there on standby.
Thank you, Jack. No further questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Alder Uguerre. Alder Harrington McKinney, I see your hand is up, and I wasn't sure if you had an additional question.
Just additional question, and referencing the caller, we did get a postcard. Is it generally sending the postcard? Is there prior notification? Is there literature that we can provide our constituents so that they could be up on it? I think that is what the issue is. And thank you, Alder G, for, you know, doing that linkage in terms of the use and the importance of it. But it would be good if we could provide the constituents some information so that they'll be very comfortable with the move. And this is a cost that is borne by the city and not constituents. Is that correct?
Is that for? Go ahead, Jack. Thanks.
If that was a question for me, can you restate that question, Alder?
So two questions. One is that the generator is something that would be provided for the staff. There's no cost to the residents surrounding that area. Is that correct?
This would come out of engineering's budget, and it would be operated by engineering staff.
Okay, excellent. And if the constituent wanted more information related to the usage, the reasoning, and I hear what the reasoning is there a informational paper that the engineering staff has that could be provided to the two callers that had questions that called in?
We don't have a paper. However, my contact information can be forwarded to anyone that has questions. I've communicated with Jay quite a bit in the past. I know he has my contact information, and we've communicated about many concerns that he has had with the landfill in the past.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks. Any other questions for registrants? Seeing no raised hands, we'll close the public hearing. And are there any other questions for staff? We've got Jack here in a dual role. So any questions from the commission for Jack or Lisa on this item? All right. Are we ready for a motion on this item, on item 11? All right. Commissioner Solheim?
Plan Commission find the standards for conditional use are met and approve a conditional use for a generator at 6802 Hammersley Road, subject to the conditions in the staff report.
Thanks, Commissioner Solheim. Alder Field, that's a second for that motion. Thank you. Are there any other comments or discussion on this item? All right. I'll call a vote. Is there any objection to unanimous approval for this item? And seeing none, we'll record it as passed unanimously. Jack, thanks for coming tonight and for agreeing to follow up on the constituent discussion.
So of course.
Yep. All right. That will bring us to item 13. Items 13 and 14 are considered together as one public hearing. Item 13 is Legistar 87471 related to 2230 Pennsylvania Avenue in Alder District 12, consideration of a conditional use in the Industrial Limited IL District for a private parking facility. I'll also read item 14, which is Legistar 87475, approving a certified survey map of property owned by Madison Square Storage LLC, located at 2230 Pennsylvania Avenue in District 12. So again, we'll hear from Lisa just to get us oriented on this project. Thank you.
Yep. So the applicant is seeking approval of a conditional use in the IL district to develop a private parking facility at 2230 Pennsylvania Avenue. The parking lot is proposed to be used by the University of Wisconsin as a park and ride facility for employees and other visitors. Users would be picked up by a university bus and then taken to the campus. The bus will pick up riders at the loading area in the parking lot, and a bus would arrive every 20 minutes during peak periods and every 30 minutes during off-peak periods. The bus service would run on weekdays and may run during the weekends if there are special events with limited bus service. The parking lot would have 229 parking spaces, 2 motorcycle parking spaces, and 6 bike parking spaces. The comprehensive plan and the Oscar Mayer special area plan recommend the site for employment. And while the proposed use is not maybe a typical employment use, staff do not believe that it will preclude this property or nearby properties from developing or redeveloping in accordance with adopted plans in the future. And staff believe the conditional use standards can be met subject to the recommended conditions of approval, which include approval by traffic engineering of a drop-off and pickup plan and adding a sidewalk connection from the sidewalk to the loading area. The project is also required to comply with the Urban Design District 4 requirements. And to meet those requirements, the applicant will need to provide additional screening along Pennsylvania Avenue between the street and the parking lot. And the project is also required to meet any city ordinance requirements for stormwater and runoff. And the, as I stated, the staff recommendation is for approval. Thanks.
Thanks, Lisa. Again, we have registrants, so we'll open the public hearing. And Megan, would you read our registrant, or read in the first registrant, I guess?
I will do that. Our first speaker is William Butcher, I believe representing the applicant team, who's registered in support and wishing to speak. And I think Lisa will share a site plan while William is speaking.
Great. Can you hear me, everybody?
We can. Welcome.
Okay.
There we go.
Thank you, everybody, Lisa, Plan Commission members. I'd like to thank city staff, especially for working with us on this project to design a more sustainable lot that meets all the requirements of the district or for the conditional use anyway, and also kind of the new and improved stormwater, which this does. As far as the other, we saw some UDC recommendations, and those were agreeable in addition to all the city staff comments as well, and the recommendations and requirements. So I just want to say that we're amenable and agreeable to all of those. Just briefly, we've been working with UW since late last summer on this project, which represents for them a long-term solution for their, staff transportation needs. It's one of the things that may seem obvious, but this lot and UW's use of it kind of relieves a bunch of both their employees having to navigate through downtown to find a difficult place to park or using the really scarce land down there for parking, but also takes all those individual cars off the isthmus and they're transported in buses. So there's, I think, obviously an environmental benefit to that. And having this here, I think, does help the city fulfill like the bigger vision or the city's future vision for what's going to happen downtown in and around the UW campus, the new Regent Street plans, et cetera, where those areas are just so dense. There just isn't the ability for UW to access this kind of land to benefit their staff. That's it. I really appreciate city staff working with us. Myself and Wade Weiss, Weiser Engineering, are available to answer any questions.
Thanks, William.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. As William noted, Wade Weiss is also available here to answer questions, registered and supported in here to answer questions from the applicant team. We also have Adam Watkins, registered and supported and available to answer questions, I believe may also be with the applicant team. And Riley Wedekind, registered neither in support nor opposition and available to answer questions. I will note that Riley is one of the members that submitted a written comment that was posted this afternoon for you. And that's all we have.
Thanks, Megan. Are there questions from the commission for any of the registrants? Alder Uygar.
That's a question for whomever might have the information on the support team that's here. How do we have any information on how the university will incentivize or encourage its employees to use this lot?
Am I still on?
Yep, William, you're unmuted, if you know.
I don't have a direct answer, Alder Uygar. Nice to see you. I do know that it's a pressing need. I don't know that they have to incentivize it. I think that it's going to be very well used. I guess other than the organic incentive of not having to try to struggle through traffic and deal with trying to find parking. And they're also will be reutilizing certain spaces that you use for parking, so that just won't be available. So this lot is going to replace certain things that they use now. So it's not an addition to necessarily, it will be in the medium term, but they will be reutilizing certain lots for development and more higher and better use projects downtown.
Thank you. And I do recall seeing something in the State Journal this morning about various choices for another residence hall that might also chew up some existing parking. So I can appreciate that this may well be needed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Solheim.
Thank you. I saw in the materials that there are 4 EV stalls being provided, which is the minimum. I think a few more EV ready have to be added. I was just wondering if you have considered exceeding the minimum requirement here with, 220 some stalls and folks parking all day. It seems like an optimum opportunity for some electric charging for employees.
Yeah, I can respond to that. I believe we had 20 EV ready, or actually UW is providing the actual, their charging stations. We're providing, we're developing the lot, all the other infrastructure, except for the EV chargers themselves. But we have electricity going to 20 of those, and one of the staff recommendations was for 23. And so we're amenable to obviously doing that. So we'll have 23 EV ready stalls, and I believe UW plans to do 20, if not 23.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Commissioner Bassin.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about efforts to solicit input from the neighborhood.
We reached out to there's kind of an overlapping couple of neighborhood associations there, as well as the Alder, and there was no follow-up to requested a public meeting. There's no immediate residential neighbors even across the way. Dimitrol Park is a large park between this and the nearest resident, I suppose, and behind it is railroad track and the old web crafters on the other side of that. So it's kind of an industrial zone. We did reach out to the neighborhood associations and the Alder, however.
Thank you. Does that answer your question, Anjali?
I think so. Can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
I know some of the public comment had suggested other existing parking lots that could be used that were situated nearby. And I'm just wondering if that was explored at all.
Not by us, although we did look at some things that came up at Oscar Mayer for potential future uses. We certainly didn't look at them for this use. They're larger lots. While they're surface lots now, I mean, honestly, our lot is designed and will be constructed with a more sustainable stormwater and visual management plan than what's there. And I think as far as Oscar Mayer goes, I don't know. We did not pursue it. It wasn't something that UW was available to them. They're just larger pieces there, some regional mixed-use stuff and things that have a kind of a higher and better use.
Thanks. Commissioner Heck?
Thank you. William, maybe you can answer this. I don't know. I'm just curious. When I think of park and ride, I think of things that are further afield than, you know, only a mile from parts of campus, I think, or maybe a little bit more than that. And given the prime real estate that this parking lot will be sitting upon, I'm curious about, did UW consider having a park and ride a little further out where land might be a little bit cheaper and likely to be under less future pressure for redevelopment than this parcel? Why so close?
I think because it's farther away than where they are now, which is too close because they need to use that land for, I guess, what their higher and better uses are, kind of like the housing thing that actually is one of the projects on one of the parking lots they have currently. So right now they don't have, you know, this option. I think I do trust the depth of their experience and having looked at whether it's the transportation time between the park and ride, where their staff is actually coming from, but that I don't have a specific answer to that, Pat. I'm sorry. Other than that, they were very careful and thorough in their search for this solution, and this kind of balanced all their needs between transit time on the bus and their, again, where their employees are coming from, and availability. And it does free up some pretty precious land down on campus for them.
Okay, thanks. One more follow-up question. Will employees be issued paid parking permits for this lot? And I noticed also that it sounds like maybe for football games or something, this might be opened up to non-permit parking. Would people be charged for that use also?
I don't have the answer to that. In none of our discussions, anything come up as far as paid parking. I don't know what UW's internal policies for this lot. They would own and operate it, you know, but on their terms, basically, we're developing it for them. But as far as operations go, unfortunately, I don't have an answer. I haven't heard about it being a paid parking. And as far as weekend, it wasn't specifically for a football game. It just said special events. Now that's, you know, up to UW and what they would use on the weekend. But it wasn't in the discussions that we've had that it was for football games specifically, and primarily Monday through Friday.
Okay, thank you. And I guess just one more thought about UW perhaps looking further afield. It would be lovely if, you know, they might consider a location where they could use Metro Transit rather than their own buses to transport employees, analogous to what Epic does. I wonder if they considered that component.
That would definitely be a question for them. I'm sure this probably isn't the first that they'll need to do as they start to utilize their land downtown. But again, I think it's probably, you know, a matrix of what's the transit turnaround time for the buses, where the staff specifically need to go. They're probably specific. They're not all going to the same place. So they'll be going through campus, you know, where Metro Transit doesn't go, like, and dropping people off at different locations, not getting dropped off at a central location, as far as I understand.
Okay. Thanks for your answers.
William, if I could just ask a quick a follow-up to Commissioner Heck's question. Do you have an agreement with the UW for a certain duration of time that this would be used as a parking as a park and ride lot?
We have a lease for 15 years.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Other questions for registrants? Commissioner McCahill.
Thank you. I sense there are a lot of unanswered questions about how this park and ride lot would work in the larger scheme of things, what UW's plans for these buses and payment are. So I guess the question for William is, are there any timing constraints we should know about if this commission felt like we did have more questions that weren't answered fully tonight?
We're under some pressure, I suppose, for UW's use of this lot and our hope to, you know, complete construction this summer. Follow-up or through site plan review, you know, we can certainly, you know, hopefully answer those questions. I don't, you know, as far as answering them now. But as far as timing, in the letter of intent, there were some specific, you know, times of specifically every 20 minutes during the peak morning hours and 30 minutes otherwise, Monday through Friday, X until, 8 p.m. or something like that, an occasional weekend use. Fairly specific, but if there's, other questions on timing, hopefully we can answer those through the review process.
Yeah, I think by timing, I was just referring to getting the project moving, not the service timing.
Right. Well, our timing is somewhat urgent for them anyway. So we'd like to get this constructed so that they can use it when the staff needs to late summer when things start happening again downtown.
Okay. Thanks.
Other questions for registrants while our public hearing is open? All right, seeing none, I'll close the public hearing for items 13 and 14 and then ask if the commission had questions for staff. Commissioner Wisniewski.
Thank you, Chair. Lisa, I understand staff recommends this be approved and they feel it's consistent with the plans. I'm having a really hard time drawing a conclusion. I question the highest and best use of this parcel, especially there and you look at tax value per acre of a parking lot versus a potential built building here to generate income for the city. Can you tell us how or enlighten me as to how staff is drawing the conclusion that it fits with the plans?
Yeah, sure. So I can maybe speak a little bit more broadly to how the ordinance is written for considering conditional uses. And then also it might help to talk a little bit about the relationship between the state statute and our city ordinances. So for conditional use, you know, there are the approval standards. So in order for conditional use to be approved, the Plan Commission has to find that all those approval standards are met. So typically in the staff report, we'll highlight any conditional use standards that might be of interest and kind of address those. So some of the, like, for example, one that we typically talk about, like when we have a use that is kind of consistent with the land use recommendation would be that standard 4, which states that, you know, the establishment of the conditional use will not impede the normal and orderly development and improvement of surrounding property for uses permitted in the district. And so that is specifically talking about the adjacent properties as they're currently zoned, which includes the industrial limited district and the regional mixed use district. And as staff, we don't feel that there's any evidence, you know, substantial evidence that states that developing a private parking lot on this parcel is going to preclude that from adjacent parcels being developed in a way that's permitted. Again, that does speak a little bit more to, like, today's uses as opposed to the future land use might speak to how we expect the property to develop in the future, and that zoning could change. So that's one of the things. But then also, another part of the ordinance is that we shall give due consideration to adopted plans, which is different than, let's say, a zoning map amendment, where Plan Commission and Council have to find that a zoning map amendment is consistent with the future land use map. Versus the conditional use, we say that you have to give due consideration to. So we should be, you know, discussing the land use, but it doesn't have to be explicitly consistent with that. And that's where we kind of turn to the approval standards to see if they're met. One thing that I did put in the staff report that we haven't kind of previously included, and I was trying to kind of address some of these land use questions from the public, is that per state statute, that it states that if an applicant for a conditional use meets or agrees to meet all of the requirements and conditions specified in the city ordinance or those imposed by the Plan Commission, that the city shall grant that conditional use permit. So in some ways, the state preempts like local authority over conditional use review through that language. So we just have to be, you know, I think the standard is pretty high in our experience as staff for finding, you know, substantial evidence that certain conditional use standards aren't being met. That's all I have.
One other specific standard that I'll just call your attention to, I know Lisa mentioned it in the staff report, is standard four, which talks about which says the establishment of the conditional use will not impede the normal or orderly development and improvement of surrounding property in the district. So looking at the impact of this site's development for the use requested on the ability for the sites around it to develop as intended is one of the considerations that you'd be looking at in this case.
Commissioner Heck.
Thank you. We received a late arriving public comment via email and one suggestion that I'm just interested in discussing with you is the option to place, like a 5-year limit on the approval for this conditional use. And I think the commenter was saying that, you know, things could evolve around the parking lot if it were to be given approval with such a condition. In my mind, it's not as if in 5 years, for instance, the parking lot becomes a non-conforming use. I suppose it could become a non-conforming use, but I don't think legally we could deny its existence, even if things had changed in 5 years. And it's not likely the plans are going to change in 5 years, but I'm still thinking this through. Is there an opportunity for us to choose to do something like that, just in case there were some condition that would change in 5 years, let's say? I also looked in the ordinances to see if I could find where it gives us that power to put a time limit on it, but I couldn't find it. So I also want to make sure that's actually the case.
There are supplemental regulations for this type of use, and I just want to pull them up to make sure I'm kind of referring to them exactly. So excuse me while I do that.
Thank you.
While Lisa is verifying that, I would say any proposal to place a time limit on an approval should be tied to one of the standards for the conditional use approval. And so being able to make clear findings about the relationship of that condition to those standards would be important.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And so under the supplemental regulations and the zoning ordinance, so that's subchapter 28J, for non-accessory parking facilities, which is what this would be considered, there is a supplemental regulation that states that in considering the conditional use, the Plan Commission may limit the duration of that use, which, if I'm interpreting that correctly, that's speaking to kind of that like length of use, not like hours of operation, let's say. So it is a supplemental regulation, but I would say that, yes, speaking to Megan's comment about tying that to one of the approval standards.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. Mm-hmm.
Other questions or discussion? Are we ready to at least start with a motion? Alder Uguerre.
Yep. I'll see if I can get a motion here. Finding that the approval standards for conditional use are met, I move that we approve a private parking facility at 2230 Pennsylvania Avenue, subject to the conditions and requirements in the staff report.
Thank you. Commissioner Solheim, second. Thank you. Discussion on the motion. Alder Uguerre, do you have any further comments?
I think I would only add here that while not directly related to all of these conditions, I certainly am impressed by the argument that this would allow the university to achieve even higher and more intense uses on the properties closer to the closer to campus. And I like this opportunity to reduce carbon input into the atmosphere by substituting individual car miles for bus miles. That's all. Thank you.
Commissioner Hatt.
Thank you. I just wanted to say I'm going to support the motion, as disappointing as I find supporting it to be, because I really am not a fan of this location for this use, but I really don't see a way around it given our approval standards. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner Heck. Other discussion on the motion? I will note that, as Megan said, alternate Bassin will be voting on this item in light of Commissioner Mendez's recusal on the item. Are we ready for a vote? Oh. Commissioner McCahill, let's get your
thanks. I'll just weigh in quickly. I find this one really tough. If just looking at a parking lot in this location, I would find it hard to say it made a ton of sense. Obviously, the city builds parking lots strategically throughout the city to, in a way that makes that, you know, conforms with our plans for transit and transportation demand management and things. I can see how it makes a lot of sense for the university. And I think I see it as a medium term solution to how the university continues to get people on campus as the city sort of grows. So I will also support it, but just wanted to talk through some of what's going through my head.
All right. I'm watching for motion. I will ask if there's any objection to unanimous approval for Alder Uguerre's motion. And this will be for item 13, and then we'll talk about the survey map after this. Any objection to unanimous approval on item 13? All right, seeing none, we'll record it as unanimously approved. Thanks for the good discussion and understandable reluctance. So item 14 is a modification to the certified survey map. And are there any questions for stat? We had the same public hearing, so no need to do another public hearing, but are there any questions for staff on the survey map itself? And if not, would anyone like to make a motion? Commissioner Heck.
I will make a motion that we approve the certified survey map at 2230 Pennsylvania Avenue with any conditions that are mentioned in the staff report.
Thanks, Commissioner Heck. Alder Uygear.
Second.
Thank you, Alder Uygear. Any discussion on this motion? Being none, is there any objection to unanimous approval for item 14? All right, seeing none, we'll record that as unanimously approved as well. Thank you. We will, that concludes our hearing items. We now have time for member announcements, communications, or business items. Do any commissioners have any of those they'd like to share or discuss? All right, seeing none, we'll move to our time for the secretary's report. So Megan, you had the floor.
Okay. Tonight we have a special numbered item under the secretary's report, which is our division's annual report for 2024. At one of your meetings, I believe in January, Brian and some of the other folks from our team presented on our two-year comp plan progress report, and this is more focused on our division's activities. So I'll just hit a few highlights, but before I jump into that, I did want to take the opportunity to correct the record. At the last meeting, I said that it was going to be the last meeting with our current council. I was obviously wrong about that. So thank you very much for the alders for being here. But more importantly, I want to thank you all for your contributions as Plan Commission members. I know that the work involved in being a Plan Commissioner is really significant, both in terms of actually showing up to these conversations and being part of the hard questions like what you had before you tonight in considering the future growth and development of the city. And I know there's a lot of homework that goes on in the background to prepare for these meetings and to show up to be able to have those thoughtful discussions. So want to thank you all for your participation and your contributions to the city and to the work of this division. One of the things that I appreciate that the staff highlights in the annual report is the number of boards, committees, and commissions that we do work with. I think some of you may be aware, but maybe not all of you are aware, that we work with several committees, not only the Plan Commission, Urban Design, and Landmarks Commission that you often hear about in the development review work that you do, but we also support the Madison Arts Commission through our public art program. And this year, we also made sure to highlight and include the fact that the Greater Madison Regional Metropolitan Planning Organization is part of our division, and that they support several bodies, decision-making bodies for regional transportation investment and planning as well. So just also want to say thank you to all of the other members that support the work of the broader division on a day-to-day basis. One of the things that I think is notable is when we think about the work of those boards and committees is not only the development review caseload, but also the fact that this body participates in our long-range planning work as well. I know that 2024 was a big year for long-range planning in the sense that it was the adoption of the first two of our area plans. And I know that those two plans really created a lot of energy and discussion about the area planning process, and in particular, some of the recommendations that go into those area plans. So appreciate you all digging in and having additional conversations about those and helping us get started and providing that your observations in the authorization of the next two area plans, the Southwest and Southeast plans, which are underway right now. There were 25 project planning meetings that happened in 2024, and 20 of them were related to the area plans. So thank you, because I'm sure many of you were also at those meetings as well. I did also just want to recognize the staff of the division as part of this. I know that you all are very familiar with seeing several of the development review planners and interfacing with them as we navigate questions about the development projects that come our way, but really appreciate, as I've been coming up to speed with the division in my first several months as part of it, the breadth and expertise that we have on this team and really the myriad ways that they are engaged in the Madison community and in helping us chart our future. So there are 35 members of the planning division that span four sections. So again, the development review section is the one you see very often. The planners that work on long-range planning is probably the group that you see next most often. We also have folks in the MPO, as I said earlier. So a huge thanks to all the staff for all their hard work and expertise that they bring to the work of the division. All right, let me see here. I did actually put some notes together so that I didn't just read to you the annual report. So let me just flip over to that really quick. One of the things that I wanted to note that is really relevant to your work is that our annual report includes not only the long-range planning work that we're doing and some work on the implementation of those plans, but also provides some stats on our development review caseload for the year and how it compares to prior years. This year, well, I should say in 2024, we approved just over 3,000 multifamily homes as part of the development review work that you all are involved in. We also approved 161 new single-family lots and 134 lots for two-family homes as well. There was preliminary approval also provided for an impressive 558 new single-family lots and 222 two-family lots, which we expect to see final approval for in stages over the coming years. I will note, though, this is a little bit of a decline from the number of particularly multifamily units that have been approved in recent years. It's similar to the number of units that were approved in 2021, but we've been closer to or in excess of 4,000 for several years since 2020. So it was a bit of a decline from previous years. In terms of the number of applications, though, we continue to see a pretty steady volume of applications, as you know from looking at your agendas. Conditional uses, zoning changes, particularly plats and CSMs, these things continue to be pretty steady in terms of the number of applications that we're seeing. Let's see here. I wanted to highlight really briefly a couple of projects that the Madison Arts Commission and the arts staff have been working on that you've probably heard about in the news or through your other engagements in city business. The Madison Arts Commission actually celebrated its 50th year as a commission at the end of 2024 and had a celebration recognizing that. But I think 2024 also represented a pretty significant year for their work and engagement in the number of installations that the team has approved and is working to procure for installation at the Madison Public Market. And we'll be working with the team there as that kind of wraps up construction and prepares to open and installing those. The team is also working on what will be one of the most significant Percent for Public Arts installations in the State Street Campus Garage. If you're not familiar, the Percent for Public Arts program dedicates a percent of the capital budget for all of the city's projects over $5 million to public art installation and preservation. So the team is really excited to begin working on procuring an artist for what we anticipate to be a sort of interactive light installation that's part of that garage. I'm sure you're also very familiar with the kind of work at the interface between our planning and arts teams with the pedestrian mall experiment on State Street last year. I know I was coming in just after the volunteer day that brought in, 400 community members to help us paint the street and really start to develop a roadmap for what last summer would include in terms of that experimentation. The team that was leading that project recently delivered a report on the findings of that experiment to the city council, and the council adopted a resolution directing a very limited version of that experiment this summer, primarily related to the budget and staffing resources that we have this summer, but directing us to continue to iterate and work together with other city agencies around some of the findings that were in that report so that we can prepare for a version 2.0 of that experiment this coming summer. And we're excited to think creatively about how that experiment might also be an opportunity for us to be doing some real life testing and engagement around some other initiatives that the city will be doing, like the downtown area plan and the curb management plan that transportation will be doing this year. We've also been following some work that other agencies are leading, particularly WSDOT. So the area plan team for the Southeast area plan has been closely following the Highway 51 study and working with transportation and WSDOT to make sure that there's a good consideration of the interface between those recommendations for Highway 51 and the land use recommendations and implications that we are considering as part of the Southeast plan. And then the report just wraps up by giving you a bit of an overview of what the MPO does. The MPO primarily helps us to plan for regional transportation through federally funded program. There are 8 planners on that team that coordinate regional transportation planning with many of our municipalities in Dane County, and ultimately help us prioritize transportation investments, again, through federal transportation money in our transportation infrastructure throughout the region. One of the things that we were very excited about at the end of the year is that that team was able to secure a little over $1 million grant through the Safe Streets for All program, federal funding program for regional pedestrian and safety planning in communities around Madison. We are still waiting to hear what the upshot of that will be given the current federal funding environment. But those are the kinds of activities that the MPO helps advance for our region. I'll leave it at that. And the report is published as part of your agenda. If there are any questions that you have, I can answer those, or I'm happy to chat offline if there's anything about our work that you'd like to hear more about.
Megan, I thought the annual report looked great, and I learned a lot from reading it. So thank you to you and Lisa and the rest of the staff for putting that together. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks to Lisa. She and a team of a small group of our team put that together and did a great job of collecting it all. So.
Thanks. Commissioner Heck.
Thanks. Yes, I wanted to add a thanks to all the staff for all their hard work, but I also have an off the top of my head idea. Given the large number of housing units that we now produce each year, this is not something you can do off the cuff, but I'm wondering if it would be instructive to see maybe the length of time from approval to opening, even maybe, of apartment buildings or maybe even single family dwellings too, because I'm wondering about the large number of apartment buildings that we approve that often are not built or take many years to get to, and maybe the change of that number over time could be instructive for various reasons. I'm not really talking about the approval process, although I guess it would be good to see if some of our efforts at streamlining the actual approval process have been helpful. But just a thought.
Yeah, that's a great thought. And I certainly appreciate that you're talking about the sort of post-approval piece of the implementation of this housing and many, many factors that go into what actually gets built. So,
right. Thanks.
Yeah, great question.
Mr. Sanders.
Thank you, Chair. I'll also add to Commissioner Heck's suggestion, I would love to see how the city makes progress toward meeting the mayoral administration's goal of adding new housing by 2030. I know we've kind of talked about this a little bit at our quarterly in-person meeting, but I would love to see, too, how we're doing and making progress toward achieving those goals each year.
Yeah, great question. And I'll draw your attention to one of the things that Heather Stouter shared in that meeting, the housing tracker that was launched by the city just at the beginning of the year. I actually haven't checked it this month, but I think she was due to provide an update on that dashboard right around this time. So that's one of the tools that we're using. And I think many of the units that we'll see show up in that dashboard right now in particular are things that you've probably approved several years in the past. So certainly some of the stuff that we'll see that will help us meet that goal is stuff that's already in the queue in the development pipeline, but also eager to see how new applications that we're seeing will help us in those out years too.
Thanks.
I just pulled up the tracker just as an FYI. And we'll refer you to it's pretty easy to find, just Google City of Madison Housing Tracker. Since January 1 of 2025, 468 new homes have been completed, and there are 4,265 homes under construction.
Thank you for the reminder on the tracker. I'm going to bookmark that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, it's a very exciting new tool that we have to help us monitor that progress.
$4,200 under construction seems like a lot.
They're all over, too.
Yeah. Other thoughts or comments on the annual report? All right. Megan, do we want to talk about upcoming matters just a little bit, or?
Let me see here. In terms of the next few meetings, I would say for your next meeting in particular, maybe one of note is a planned project to replace an existing building at Capitol Lakes in downtown. There will be a replacement building, a 44-unit assisted living facility that's being replaced by a new 49-unit senior apartment building. So that's one item that we will see. The other on the list of upcoming matters in May, you'll see that one of the items that had been tentatively referred to your first meeting in May is an update on the Urban Design Commission code update. That item will likely be less of a discussion of the pending ordinance itself and more of an update for you on how we propose to get us to a place of having a more robust set of recommendations for updating the UDC code. So we'll share more updates with you there with Jess Vaughn, from the UDC secretary. Thank you for the reminder.
I
shared the annual report and forgot about the upcoming matters. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, good. Oh, good. All right. I think we may be ready for a motion to adjourn if there's no other business to discuss. Commissioner Heck, thank you. Alder Field, thank you for the second. Any objection to unanimous approval for a motion to adjourn? Seeing none, we will stand adjourned and we'll see you on the 28th.
Thank you all. Have a good night.